We are going to be continuing with Lab 1 and starting Lab 2 today. And actually, you should do those in reverse order, meaning start Lab 2, since you have, what, 20 minutes or something like that it's supposed to stir? And during that time, you'd be able to continue working on Lab 1. Now, let me talk about some logistical details first with Lab 2, because I got somewhat irritated with Section 3 yesterday. And it wasn't necessarily any one person's fault. All that was happening is they were asking questions. But what started to get me a little irritated is I got the sense that maybe some of them were reacting and not necessarily thinking through the situation that they were getting stuck in. And what had happened is this particular reaction, the sodium borohydride reduction that you're doing, does have some unusual behavior as far as what happens to the solution. The number one thing that will confuse you possibly is that soon after the reaction starts, whether that's a few minutes or right away, you may end up in a situation where it appears as if you have no solvent. And that's because the sodium borohydride, when it decomposes, can form these byproducts that kind of foam up or make what looks almost like something like marshmallows or something, or a crystalline solid. And there's something in the procedure that speaks to that, something along the lines of, if you don't have a solvent or if you only have a solid, add 1 milliliter of methanol at a time until you're able to reform a solution again. Is there something like that at some point in the procedure? And so what kept happening is people kept coming up and saying, well, I've got this solid, and it says to add methanol, but I still have a solid, to which my answer was, add more methanol. You know, if the whole point of trying to do reaction is making sure these reagents mix, they're not going to mix well unless you do have a solution, and you don't have a solution unless you have enough solvent. So, I understood that they were confused because it wasn't exactly behavior you had seen before. But at the same time, you have had a previous quarter of lab in which time you hopefully had some sense about solutions and solvents and such. Or if not, then you need to know that, yes, for a reaction to occur well, you need to have everything mixed properly. So if you end up in a situation where you end up with solids, nothing to stir, you need to add more methanol in order to turn it back into a solution again. Now, coupled along with that, some of them were rather aggressively heating their systems, which there wasn't anything necessarily wrong with that, except that they ended up with some of the solids by coming up with the solvent falling back down, and then that solid that was dissolved in it being left behind as a residue, it had the appearance of making some of the solids creep up the sides of the flask. Well, if you have these solids up the side of the flask, you want to scrape them off with a spatula, get them back into the solution again to make sure that everything really is reacting. Now, I know that it says that it's supposed to turn completely colorless once the reduction is done, but don't necessarily depend on that. I'm wondering if there might be a little bit of impurity in there that's causing even the fully reduced solutions to be ever so slightly colored. Also, sodium borohydride is going to decompose. I've wrote the simplified mechanism up here of what's happening. Sodium borohydride versus lithium aluminum hydride. They do have different reactivities because the boron hydrogen bond is not nearly as polarized as the aluminum hydrogen bond. And both aluminum and hydrogen, or aluminum and boron, are less electronegative than hydrogen, which is why hydrogen acts as a hydride. But in sodium borohydride, it is a less reactive compound, so you can get away with using it in the presence of protic solvents. Now, you might remember the term protic, meaning something that could have the potential to be acidic. And acidic doesn't mean necessarily something like hydrochloric acid. It doesn't have to be a strong acid. It just means have the potential to dissociate in an extremely strong base. Well, alcohols with a pKa of 16 to 18, that still counts as a protic system, and they will react with hydride. So even if you stir for 20 minutes, even if your ketone gets completely reduced, your solution's going to sit there and bubble and bubble and bubble and bubble and bubble. So at some point, really, if you wanted to know if it was really done or not, we could be doing TLC, which I don't think is mentioned in this procedure, but if you think about it, we have a ketone that we're turning into an alcohol. So there should be some noticeable difference in polarity between those two compounds. Since TLC is a technique based on polarity, we could take a spot of the solution, put it on the plate, see if only one dot forms or two dots form, and compare it also at the same time to the starting material. If you end up with only one dot in your product and it matches the starting material, you know the reaction hadn't gone at all yet. If you end up with a dot that was completely different, you know that you had completely converted your product or into product. And if you had two dots, one that matched the starting material, one that was not matching, well, then you know that reaction's working, but it's not done yet. But you don't know it, whether it's done or not, but I'm just going to tell you from past experience that 99% of the time, a sodium borohydride reduction after 15, 20 minutes, it's over. It's done. It will work. So, one last time, though, if you end up with solids, just add more methanol in order to get it to dissolve up. Now, backtracking to experiment one, since we have let these mixtures for so long, I'm guessing that almost all of you have a solid that's sitting in your flask right now. And you might remember that for most of you, where you left off, you had just finished your heating and you needed to do that separation of the two layers. Well, you don't have two layers at this point. You have water and a solid. So what are you going to do? Well, you don't have to heat it up again. To get rid of the solid doesn't necessarily mean you need to melt it. We need to dissolve it. Now, if you didn't get your full half hour of heating that you needed to do, then go ahead and heat up and continue. But otherwise, you're just going to add ether in so that you have your two layers. You then, and this part, people got confused, and I'm wondering if in one of the three sections I said it backwards by accident. But here's what you're trying to do. You're trying to get as much of that organic product out of the water layer as you can. Now, most of it's going to come out just from the two layers separating as soon as the reaction's over. And so that's why you take the bottom layer, the aqueous layer, drain it out, put it aside, drain the organic layer, and keep it. You're not going to get rid of that first organic layer, but you are going to set it aside initially. Because then you're going to take the water layer, put it back in your separatory flask, add more ether to it so that you can try to get more of the organic product out of it. Once you've extracted the water, then you get rid of the water layer, which we have an aqueous waste and we have a basic waste over here. And since this was an acidic condition, you added some acid with the bleach, I would assume that that first aqueous layer is going to be acidic. You then take the organic layer that you had extracted from that aqueous layer, combine it with the first organic layer, so it all becomes one organic layer. And then you do your sequence of washes. But again, you don't have to heat anything just because there's a solid. The solid just happened to form because, in fact, I'm guessing that's product that you form. Now, in one or both of the reactions, the product may end up acting unusually. And in the other two sections, I purposely didn't comment on it, but I guess to make sure that you all have a little more confidence in what you're doing, I'll spill the secret on this one. The ether, which, by the way, I had thought I mentioned it to all three sections, but we're not distilling. Did I mention that in the first day that we're not going to separate this by distilling, that we're just going to evaporate the ether off? You're all looking at me like, I don't know if we know that or not. Well, now I'm telling you, we're not going to do distillation because it would just take too long. So there's a couple of ways. Gosh, I didn't talk about using now I'm blanking on the term. Not the inlet valve. The one with the... Now that's embarrassing. No, I want every quarter about people not knowing the names of glassware. Now I can't think of the name of the simple one. The one that's a hose connector and a ground glass that's just got a valve on it? Flow control adapter. Did I not talk about the flow control adapter? All right, well then let me tell you about the flow control adapter. Because what you can do is you can take your ether layer, put it into a round or a pear-shaped flask. One common mistake that keeps happening, and I hope all of you are listening just for this one sentence. Ground glass joints don't fit on non-ground glass glassware. If you have an Erlenmeyer flask, that glass stopper will not stopper it. It looks like it does. It may get stuck in there, but they're two different surfaces. In order to use ground glass glassware, that's the stuff where it feels gritty, it feels rough, both things that you stick together have to have that exact same taper. So, if you put your ether layer into a pear-shaped flask, you can then put that flow control adapter on it. So you're going to have something that looks like this.
this we can use to slowly introduce the solution to vacuum. Sometimes if you take a solution, put it directly under vacuum, it bubbles, it boils, it bumps. You don't want that. You might even want to put a stir bar in here just to help agitate the solution as it's being evaporated. We could do a normal open to atmosphere removal of ether, but as long as it's working still, we have a vacuum system. Well, we will have once I yell at them again. Give it about 20 minutes. So you can put that under vacuum. That will quickly remove the ether layer. Your product is a solid, but you won't get that solid until the very last of the ether has disappeared. Because even a tiny little bit of ether is going to dissolve it up and make a solution. If you did heat it out in the open, if we don't get the vacuums working at all, remember that solids melt. So if you're sitting heating your ether, and you're heating your ether, and you never get a solid, well, if it's 100 degrees Celsius, how are you ever going to get a solid? Because even if you had your product, you melted it. So every once in a while, if you're not sure if all the ether's gone, take it off of the hot bath, and so you can see if it crystallizes again or not. In the second experiment, the solids I saw forming yesterday, transparent practically. And so again, people worried, wait, I don't have any solvent. And I looked down at the bottom of the flask, and the whole bottom of the flask is covered with a thin film, which if you then scraped it up, might be more material than you would think there'd be there. You could be surprised how much material might be in what appears to be a thin film. So don't be surprised, because again, you might not see that solid until the last little bit of solvent comes off, and in that particular case, you might have difficulty seeing it if even it's real there, really there. Question that keeps coming up, wait, I've got this solid, I can see it, but it's all over the inside of my flask. How in the world am I going to get out of there? An awful lot of scraping. There are more sophisticated ways to get material to recover it, but for this lab, you don't have one right now. So it's just, yes, manually trying to get all of it scraped out. I think those were all the major problems that I came across. So are there any questions before I let you all start? We will, by the way, just continue the second lab on Monday, and so there is no pre-lab for the third lab due, even if the schedule and the syllabus says I'm overriding both of them and saying don't worry about a pre-lab for Monday. All right? Let's go ahead and get to work then.